So, Be'ezrat Hashem, we're going to continue a little bit from the wonderful Torah that we're learning in Likutei Moharan, Torah 31 in Likutei Moharan. We're in the seventh part. We have a few surprises today also. So Rabbeinu is writing in the seventh part in the Likutei Moharan, Torah 31. Veda, and you should know, Shelo dai la'adam bi'ishtokekut balev bilvad. It's not enough for the person only to have a strong will and a desire in his heart. Ki tzarich ha'adam le'otzi bisfatav kisufav. Because the person have to take out with his lips all of his will and desires. Means to pray to Hashem, to ask. Ve'al ze nisdar seder ha'tfilot. And based on that important thing of revealing our hearts to Hashem Yitbarach, based on that, and because that Rabbanan knew our needs, this is why they established for us all of the 18th brachot, 19th brachot that we have today. Ki al yedei shtokekut balev, because by wanting things with the heart, na'aseh nefesh, we're creating souls, unekudot bekoach, and vowels, like that we said, that the vowels of the letters are like souls in the bodies of people, that you cannot read the letters, you cannot read the words without having vowels. And also people, if they don't have neshama, if they don't have a soul, it's like earthen, it's like made out of earth, out of clay, it's like mud, it's like animals. They don't have a soul, they don't have a will, they don't have a desire. But it's all still in power. Just only when the person is expressing himself outside with his mouth, then he brings the souls to be active. Means that if you want something, so you're bringing good energy to the world, but you're not making no change. But if you're praying, if you're making hitbodeduyot, if you express yourself, and you're mentioning what you want and what you want to achieve, and you're telling it to Hashem Yitbarach, you're making those goodwill to become, to be souls that are going to do things in the world. People are going to wake up and going to come and going to start to do good things for... and actually going to bring and the salvation into action, into active. Like the Rav Shalom said, he came back, Baruch Hashem, now from the United States, and he came very happy. He mentioned that a few times. He came very, very happy. Not like you, that you escaped here, and this is why you're very happy. He came very happy because he saw a lot of Jews waking up, and a lot of non-Jews that also came to his classes, and mamash, joining to Am Yisrael, and starting to believe in one thing, in one God, God of Am Yisrael. And he saw tons of believers, of people that holding those wonderful books and distributing that wonderful, amazing light. And he saw thousands and thousands of people that came to him and told him that they're doing 1 hour Hitbodedut every day, talking to Hashem. Came back very happy, mamash, satisfied. He said that now he realized the reason why Am Yisrael, he saw that mamash, it's a must that Am Yisrael gonna be in the exile. Even though that we don't want Am Yisrael to be in the exile, and we want all Jews to come to Eretz Yisrael and to make Aliyah, and in Suda Shlishit he said that, he mentioned how much we should thank Hashem and to know where we are and how lucky we are that we are here and we're not in all of the filthy places and very low places that exist in this world. But still he said, if Jews wouldn't be in those places, they wouldn't be able to spread the light to the nations. And there are very, very important souls from the nations that have to join Am Yisrael. And the spiritual body of Am Yisrael cannot be complete until all of the Gerim, all of the people that have to join Am Yisrael, going to join. We have to complete ourselves. A lot of sparks fell and disappeared and went away from the soul of Yaakov Avinu, of Israel, because of all of the exile. Because all of the horrible exile. And we have to bring those sparks back. How those sparks come back? By Gerim. the Gerim that are coming, joining Am Yisrael, those are the holy, those are souls of Am Yisrael, just they have a certain wall that they have to break, that they have to cross back, to come back to Am Yisrael. They are souls of Am Yisrael even before, just they need to have a certain tuning, a certain attachment to have, that they're going to have the ability to join back to Am Yisrael. Actually, once Rav Berland explained a wonderful thing about it, and he said, on all of Chasidei Umot HaOlam, all of the non-Jews that were putting huge efforts on helping Am Yisrael during the Holocaust and during all of other horrible periods of time, that Am Yisrael were being supported by a lot of non-Jews that were protecting them, saving them, governors and ministers and people that were helping, or rich people that were hiding Jews in decrees or things like that. And Rav Berland explained that those Chasidei Umot HaOlam, those important people, actually their souls are souls of Jewish people that have been forced or to die on Kiddush Hashem or to blend in the nation, means to mix with them in a way that is not right by Halakha, but it happened through the exile. And those souls are looking for years for a way to go back to Judaism. And here they had their opportunity. So, or by Goyim, that Rav Shalom said that a lot of people came to him and told him, we're Bnei Noach, we're sons of Noach. They're not saying we're Americans, we're from Canada, we're this. We're sons of Noach, immediately. So, they realize, they understand their part of being part of sons of Noach. And they're supportive, and the Israel lovers, and they're supporting Am Yisrael. Oh, that they have an even stronger desire to connect themselves to the source. And why? Because they feel connected. They feel that it's their source also. So they have to do something. They have to make a certain act for that. Lucky are the ones that achieve that. Very lucky. It's written on the Gerim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves them even more than He loves us, Am Yisrael. In a higher level of love. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the Gerim even more than He loves the Jews. This is something. I know that once I talked to Rav Shalom about a certain Ger, and Rav Shalom, that I saw Rav Shalom helping him very much and doing things for him more and more and more. And I was amazed. I enjoy seeing how much that Rav is helping that Ger. And Rav Shalom told me, because that he's a ger, this is what he said, because that he's a ger, I love him so much. Rav Shalom is the mouth of Hashem Yitbarach. You cannot understand. It's just, you have to believe. He's saying, because that he's a ger, I love him so much, and I have to help him so much. He's got a desire to help him because he's a ger. We cannot understand. But like that we're saying always on Baal Teshuva, on people that coming from distance, the fact that you came from such a distance, it doesn't reveal your lacking. It reveals the power of your will. How strong is your will that you're ready to dedicate days and nights and to cross the desert and to cross the sea and to climb on all of the mountains to reach what that you really want to. A person that's born here in Mea Shearim and is from birth or from habit, and he doesn't know nothing, also to wake him up to serve Hashem Yitbarach in Mesirut Nefesh, it's going to be even harder. It's going to be even harder. Why it's going to be so hard? Because he feels good. Everything is good for him. He doesn't have nothing that's going to wake him up. But the person that's born so far away, and he lives in the darkness, and he realizes that he is full with lies, and that the world is full with lies, and he's deciding a huge, brave decision, to cross the ocean, to cross the desert, to cross everything, to climb on all of the mountains, to reach the truth, to come, to build, to be joined to Beit HaMikdash, to Am Yisrael. It's a huge task, mission. And the one that is doing it is very brave. All of us, the Baal Teshuva and the Gerim, all of us are very brave. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu see the effort and counts the tears and the sweat and all of our efforts, all of our Hishtadluyot. And like that it's written in the Holy Zohar, that even a good will of a man will never going to disappear, never going to go lost. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is counting every will and every desire, good desire, and every wishing, and every prayer, and every will, and every tear, and every sorrow. And Kadosh Baruch Hu is holding all of them and counting all of them and keeping them and saving them for you for the moment that you're gonna need, that you're married, gonna say good things on you, that they're gonna judge you in a positive way, to let you to get closer and closer and closer. So by those itbodeduyot, we're helping those souls to wake up. When we're doing even a simple itbodedut, just you mentioning, Hashem, please, I want to get closer to you. Someone, somewhere, wakes up to say to Hashem Yitbarach from that feeling, Hashem, I want to get closer to you. You're saying to Hashem Yitbarach, Hashem, I want to put tefillin. Someone, somewhere, wakes up to say, wow, amazing thing, that tefillin. I wish I had a pair of tefillin. So, exactly like that. You think a certain thing, it can make a good positive energy. But if you express it, if you say those words, Hashem, I want to put tefillin, I want to keep Shabbos, Hashem, I want to be holy, I want to get closer to you. If you're saying those words are going to become to be angels that are going to go and conquer the world and going to create Gerim and Baalei Teshuva to join Am Yisrael, to become one with us. That we all one. Ke'ish echad, belev echad, is one man with one heart. Ki ikar motza hanefesh, because the main place that the spirit, the soul comes out is from the mouth. Himipiv bivchinat, in aspect of what it's written in Shir HaShirim, nafshi yatza bedabero. My soul came out when he talked. Means that when you're talking, you're expressing yourself, means you reveal your neshama. You reveal who that you really are. And in the beginning, when the spirit, when the neshama, when the soul is still contaminated, the first layers, the first levels of the neshama that is being expressed out, it's still the filth that is covering the neshama. But after a while, with the years, means for an example, in the beginning that you try to learn how to talk to Hashem, and you start your hitbodeduyot, and you're talking and talking, in the beginning you're looking at yourself and you say, hey, it's a crazy man, what's going on with me? Crazy man, I'm sick, I'm crazy, I'm talking nonsense, I'm so confused, this is my neshama, so I have a very low neshama, very confused neshama. No, it's just the beginning. This is how that we're cleaning out, taking out, getting rid of all of the husks and filth that have been stuck to our neshama. But after 1 hour itbodedut, the second will not going to be the same. After 1 year of itbodedut, the second will not going to be the same. Rav Shalom said, after every 6 hours of itbodedut that a man is doing, after every 6 hours like that, he's receiving a gift that's going to go with him forever, always going to walk with him, certain private supervision, certain wisdom that's going to follow him, going to walk with him, going to support him forever. You're progressing with every hitbodedut and hitbodedut that you have. This is the main connection to Hashem. And you're just tying yourself and bonding yourself to Hashem more and more and more. And this is why it's written, Torah yevakshu mipihu. The Torah they're going to ask from his mouth. What it means. That you were talking and now they're asking for Torah. You were talking in the field. You asked Hashem Yitbarach to give you something, to get you closer to something, and suddenly someone, somewhere in the world is waking up, and he wants Torah. He says, I want to learn Torah. I want to get closer to that mitzvah, to that mitzvah. Mipihu daika, from his mouth, means it's your merit. If you have it, bodeduyot, so for sure that you created already gerim and baalei teshuva, with your prayers, with your hitbodeduyot. For sure, you need to know that from your mouth, especially. Vegam targumo shel, and also it's written in Bereshit, Vayi Adam lenefesh chaya, that the man he becomes to be a live spirit, a live soul. Targumo, the translation of it, leruach memalela, to a spirit that can talk, means that the man, the difference between a man and an animal, it's only by the ability to talk. So if a man is holding a level of not talking to Hashem, he's still in the level of an animal. We need to make people that are in a low level of like being like animal, acting like animals, just looking after the needs, to bring them up to the level of talking. Talking to Hashem Yitbarach. By that you created them. This is why Rabbeinu, why it's written also that when if a person have a student, he makes a Baal Tshuva, so it's like that he brought him to the world. Because before of that, even though that he was 20, he was 40, he was 60, he wasn't a man at all. He wasn't talking to Hashem. And now he just reborn, he just came to the world when he started to talk to Hashem. Ki ikara nefesh ma'adibur. Because the main part of the spirit, of the soul, is coming from speech. Baruch Hashem. Thank you very much. Be'ezrat Hashem. Now, im irtze Hashem, be'ezrat Hashem, we're gonna meet our lovely friend, very nice friend of us, Nisim, that he's gonna tell us a little bit on his life. And after it, we have another two important guests also, Be'ezrat Hashem, that's gonna share with us a little bit, a drop from the sea, from the amazing miracles, Nisim miracles. He's gonna tell us a little bit, he's gonna start Be'ezrat Hashem. We're all gonna learn Be'ezrat Hashem. And welcome, Nisim. Take that wonderful, important seat. You have to shake and be afraid before using it.
Yeah, too much. Shake a little
bit. Let me sit here.
Yeah, yeah. Feel comfortable. Feel good.
It's too much kavod. Way too much. Hashem. How's everybody? Good. Oh, Hashem. I don't know where to start. Something very interesting. As a ger, it's very funny. A lot of people make a very, very simple assumption. And it's something that, you know, most people would make. They'll say, in order for you to, you know, come to Yiddish guy, you must have took a lot of Mesiu Nefesh, a lot of, you know, a lot of strength, and a lot of, like, dedication, that's not what happened. Not what happened at all. I just fell in love with Hashem. Before I even knew, you know, read Begana Emunah, Begana Shalom, all I had was Hebrew to do. I didn't know. I had no idea. I had no knowledge of Torah or anything. I had a lot of questions, and the only way I knew to really ask those questions were to pray on them. And so, even before I knew anything, I'd spend 2-3 hours, I'd go into a place, and I'd talk to Hashem for 2-3 hours. I had no idea. And every single day, one thing I noticed is that the more and more I did that, I got closer and closer to Hashem. I had no concept of what I was really even asking for, or what I really knew, but I knew that the more and more I was davening on the situation, on, you know, Hashem, he's opening me up to this new light, it was all, and from that, I developed a relationship with Hashem, fell in love, and it was easy for me to follow after him. It was easy for me because now I had the love of Hashem, so it was a little bit easier for me. But, so backing up a little bit, just my upbringing, you know, I grew up in Seattle, Washington. Anybody, you know, from Brooklyn or the Bronx or maybe from LA or Compton, or may say, you know, Seattle, Washington. Not Seattle, Washington. I grew up in the hood in Seattle, Washington, and yes, there is such a thing. My parents love them to death, but they raised me in an environment, today that obviously I would never raise my children in, and I know that they would never expect for me to. But I grew up seeing a lot of violence, a lot of drugs, both sold and taken in. It was very, very tough. On me growing up, but at the time I thought this was normal. This is what life is. This, you know, everybody sells drugs. Everybody's parents do this or do that. So this is what I thought life was. And it wasn't really until I was about 13 years old. When I was 13 years old, I was really into hip hop, you know, and I ended up going to this hip-hop program. So this hip-hop program happens to be at this Christian mission place. The name of this place is called the Union Gospel Mission, so I went. And it was so awesome because, you know, we got to do this whole play, and you were so focused on the hip-hop thing. Nobody brought up God or anything. It was really nice. You know, I got to go and do my thing, and I wasn't even thinking. I was just, you know, doing my hip-hop thing. I got invited to go to a camp. So this camp was an 8-day camp in the middle of nowhere. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to go to this camp. It was the most fun I had ever in my whole entire life. So beautiful. And I think the most beautiful part about it was is that it took me out of my environment. So for the first time, this was really the first time I was able to say that, hold on, things don't have to be the way, you know, the way that I see them. And, you know, believe it or not, after these 8 days, I became a devout Christian, and I was very stern and devout and into it for about 8 months. And then after that, you know, you hit the bumps, you go up. I was in, I was out. I was in, I was out. I was very, very, you know, heavily involved in the Bible study groups there, and I had a lot of questions. And a lot of the questions that I had were never really answered. They were kind of like, you know, they were kind of answered, kind of swept under the rug. So I still really had these, you know, these questions that went lingering on. So as time goes on, you know, you stop going. Life happens. High school happened. And then after that, slowly but surely, I started hanging around some of the same guys that I was hanging around before. And that led me down another path that was leading back down deeper into the darkness, into the abyss that that I was coming out of, you know, I thought I was coming out of in the first place. And so in the midst of all that, I got to a place where I really wanted to find Hashem. And I wanted to find those the answers to the questions that I had. So, you know, apart from Harav Arush, There's a huge Rav. He's a Talmid Chacham. I don't know if you guys know who he is, but he's amazing. He changed my life because I had nobody. His name is Rabbi Google. I went to Rabbi Google and I typed in all the answers to my questions. You know, these questions, you know, if Yeshu, if he was Jewish, how come Christians are not Jewish? If, you know, which religion was first? Was Islam, Christianity, or, you know, or Judaism? You know, simple questions, very logical at the time. And, you know, one of the things I found out that was fascinating that I think really started me was the fact that Christmas wasn't real. Then I found out Easter wasn't real. And then, you know, I started finding out so many different things, and it was like, for me, I was like, whoa. And so from that, so it leads me back into falling in love with Hashem. I was so confused and I was so hurt that the natural response from that was talking to Hashem. I had no idea. I didn't know anything else except for that. So I would go off for hours and go talk to Hashem. Not only about this, but life in general. I had no idea, maybe not from Breslov. I had nothing. So it was really like, you know. But the more and more I realize that there's a pasuk I'm telling Lim. Sorry, forgive me for not knowing the address, but at least say it in English. But it says that if you delight yourself in Hashem, then He'll give you the desires of your heart. Now, you know, reading this in Peshat, at least in English, it definitely would seem like, oh, if I'm happy about serving Hashem, He'll give me the desires of my heart. Catch 22. The more you delight yourself in Hashem, the more your desires become His desires, and His wants become your wants, and His will becomes your will. And so the more and more I spent time with Hashem every day, He became my best friend. So naturally, I started loving what He loved, and then I found the love of Torah, I found the love of Am Yisrael. I fell in love with this completely, and it was all bottled up. I really didn't know what to do. And I just kept growing, one after another. I still really didn't have any concept of what I was doing with Tefillah. I was just praying. And Baruch Hashem, slowly but surely, we went through a Messianic phase. We started going to a Messianic temple, you know. It was easy to give up everything else, but to give up Yeshua at the time, you know, that was where the line stopped. You know, that was really tough. And then, after Baruch Hashem, we was able to learn and get past that and let it all go. Hashem opened up doors like never before. And not only was it myself, and I was able to carry my wife along with me on this journey, but also my brother-in-law is here today, and my sister-in-law were also to come, and another really close friend. I mean, we moved in to the neighborhood together, each of us all together experiencing and going through it together, each of us having our own different way, but it was very much so. Hashem chose us as a unit, no doubt about it. And so after moving into the community, this is where it really gets fun. What happens, you know, things are going great. Shalom bayit. So much, you know, Hashem can't make everything so easy. All right, I got over the part where it was nothing. I love Hashem, it was easy, you know. And we went for Sukkot. We went to one of the rabbis in the neighborhood's house. And you know, he was talking a little bit, and he had on his shelf, he had three copies of Begana Shalom. And so he says, you know, here you go, you can have this one, it's really good. You know, we told him a little bit, he was like, hey, you should read this, you should read that. Changed my life. I tell you this, I've seen miracles and changes instantly from reading that book. And I tell you, and even at the time when I had no idea about nothing, very, very simple knowledge, you know, I'm learning Torah, Chumash, and very, very simple, but that opened me up to a whole different, I was able to really define my tefillot and my Hebrew Ledud, and I knew what it was, what I was doing before. I had no idea what I was doing before, but it opened me up to a whole other world. And I seen changes in my marriage instantly. And it's one of those things. I know everybody's experienced this. Or whatever. How does he know that? How is that, Robbie? How does he know that? It's amazing. And I was sitting there just like, this is crazy to me. And it was to the point where I had to put the book down because I was scared. It was happening so quick and so fast. And she was saying exactly what her Rob said that she would say. That I was completely. I tell you one story. It was amazing. I you know, for several years, you know, I was growing my beard. It's not too much here, but you know, if I comb it out, probably I got you beat. You beat too, you know. Black hair. Anyway, so I start growing. You know, my beard on my wife. I had every thought that she was like, I hate it. I can't stand it. And so I was like, okay, for 2 years, I was just like, you know, I didn't listen to it. After I read Rob's book and, you know, first place, and I said, okay, I didn't even tell her. I went to the barbershop, I got a haircut, and I shaved off my beard, came back. And there's a part in Begana Shalom where Rob says that sometimes it's not about, she just wants to know if you put in her first, if you really believe that she's, you know, that if you can make her feel like she's in first place, and usually that's it. So I tell you, I went, cut it off, and went lay down one day, hung out with my wife, and she says to me, "You can grow your beard back." I said, "What? For the last 2 years, you've been telling me I hate it, I can't stand it, you know, you won't touch me, you know?" And she says, "You grow back." I said, "What do you mean? This is, you know, after reading the book, and he both do it." She says, "I just wanted to see if you love me enough to do it." I said, "I gotta close this book." And so, Baruch Hashem, from that, you know, Begana Shalom to Begana Emunah and all that. And I tell you truly, and I think I speak for both my brothers when I tell you this story. I mean, truly, all the way on the other side of Seattle, you have, you know, the Rav has Talmidim over there. I'm telling you completely. And it's been able to do something, you know, very, very great for me. But Baruch Hashem, thank Rob Dror. Hopefully that's enough, because I think that's all I got for you guys right now. Unless there's any questions, I guess I could take questions too. Any questions from anybody? Looks like there's no questions.
How did your family react?
To which part?
The whole thing, essentially.
The whole thing, essentially?
Jewish, you know.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, when I was 19, I lost my mother to drug addiction, to pain medication. So she wasn't here to see. You know, I do have a father, biological father, and my stepfather who raised me. And my stepfather, I mean, we stay in contact. You know, he's proud of me, but he's not as proud. You know, we don't get to be around each other. We have different lives, and therefore we live, you know, contrary to one another, so we're not around each other all the time. So I don't think he's mad per se the fact that it's Yiddishkeit, but it's just the fact that the relationship is not there, because you know, it's one way. You want to be separate, you want to have Kedushah. I want to expose my children to a lifestyle that's sweet and that involves Torah, and fortunately not. But what's interesting is my biological father, who's now become a Christian theologian, a professor of theology, he supports me 100, completely 100. I mean, he's been one of the biggest supporters, and even seeing him, even though it's a completely different derech, I mean, from the way he was before, you know, back in the 80s and 90s until who he is now, he's been a completely different guy. You wouldn't even be able to tell. And because of that, I think that helps us to have kesher, and so he's been amazing. So other than that, outside family, it's mixed, you know, it's back and forth, you know, don't know really at all what they think. Let me take him first, because I've seen him, and then, yeah.
Seattle's a very small community, obviously not many kosher restaurants, and here, right. We have hotels, we have restaurants, and so much
available to us. Don't boast. Thank you.
Times when you need the kids of strength.
That
you're waivers, but what having other resources there, what do you really turn to that gives you a lot of mood and gives you a lot of strength?
So every day or every other day, there's a shiur post that you may have not known about. It's Rav Doror Moshe Kusato. He teaches Lakutei Maharan. Countless of times I've davened Hashem. I was just telling the Rav the other day. He doesn't even know. I mean, we all watch him almost every single day. That I've davened on something, you know, for hours, you know, Shah, he's supposed to do, you know, and just answer right now. Just turn it on, boom, and it's right there. And so, I mean, really, apart from that, I have my two brothers here that, I mean, we really strengthen each other. And it's hard because there are, you know, especially in a smaller community, there's different thoughts and different ways of thinking, philosophies and all that. And some of them don't even know, but this is, you know, it's not this way. And so it does get tough. But I think that having that support system of, you know, my brothers here and then... also, Harav, even though he doesn't know, you know, that definitely, so.
First of all, both were amazing.
Oh, Hashem, that's the Hashem.
The question is, what do you think is different about you that you came to this searching than somebody else?
Than somebody else?
And right. You came to Google and you started to make the searches.
Right.
So that takes an incredible amount of desire to know. Why do you feel like somebody has that desire? Somebody else just either refuses to acknowledge.
Good question.
What do you think separates you from the
You know, I really don't know if there's an actual answer, but I know there's this thing. If you speak to most Gerim, that happens a lot of time to people who don't know they're Jewish until after, you know, some type of revelation is made. There's a sense of, there's at least a moment where you feel that you're different and disconnected from everyone else in your environment. So case in point, for me, when I was in my 10th grade year of high school, I remember walking down, I went to, as far as sports go, especially in Seattle, I mean, even nationwide, for sports, you're known as the top schools, you know, you can go to in all the country. Now, and very precise, you know, predominantly African-American population in high school. I remember walking down the hallway one day, and it was almost like I was there, but I wasn't there, and I had this disconnect, and I realized something told me that I'm different than everybody else here. And it was just a moment of knowing that. And so I think I go back to how Rob was saying that there's sparks and they're inside of people. And every once in a while, a person realizes that they're, I mean, even when I was, middle school, you know, I started selling drugs. I was 12 years old when I started selling drugs. I still had a sense of morality that didn't match the environment that I was in, that I knew that something, you know, I knew wrong from right at a very early age. I you know, talk about talking to Hashem. I don't know who taught me that. I can't remember a time I was ever taught that. You know, it started off really, you know, very, very cliche. The kid, God, if you get me out of this, I promise I'll never do this again. You know, started that from that. It grew. It got bigger and bigger. So, Baruch Hashem. But, that's all I can really say. It's just some type of consciousness that enters into that person and their soul, and they know that they're different. And from that, I just started asking questions. You better address us too. It's all good. We're good. We'll start a club.
The Masons where Jews were not permitted or limited from doing certain mitzvot, those mitzvot fell into the ground.
Right.
And once the spark come up into a person who's not a Jew, it lights up and pulls him to be a kid. That's what was the deal.
If Rabbeinu said it, who am I to argue? Who am I to argue? Go ahead.
Two questions. One question, how do you feel your aspect of music has changed always? Besides that's drugs and that's Judaism.
All right.
How do you feel? I mean, technically, when you were 20 years old, whatever it was, you were singing about your life.
Right.
So what changed? How do you feel? What's so, music to you today?
Music to me today. You know, it took me a long time to realize that I wanted to go back into recording music before, because, you know, the environment of, you know, like I said, what I was in before was so much tumor. You know, it was hard to really, to feel like I can clean something like that because of the industry. It's not just the music in itself, it's the people that you have to surround yourself around, right? It's, yes, all of it. I think what it was for me was understanding the power of influence that I had. That was one of the first things that realized me. Apart from the fact that I had my two bros over here pounding me, like, we got to do this, we got to do this, we can change the world, we can do this and all that, you know. But maybe apart from that was the fact that I was invited by the local high school there to do a Shabbaton. And not to do any music, but I was just coming just to speak and tell my story, like I am here today. And I was able to connect with the kids on a whole nother level. And the power of influence that I had on them, the Rabbanim in the community, they can't connect to the kids like that, but I can connect to the kids like that. And I realized that it was through the power of music. They all knew who I was before. They were, you know, familiar and so. And I realized that, and I said that, wow, I can do this, and I can do that. I was like, I have to do it. I have to go out and use my gift. And it was one of those things I really dabbled on for a long time. And then, you know, my beloved brother here said to me, he said, you know, Rav Shalom Arush says that a person that has gifts and talents can't just sit and learn all day. You know, he said that to me. Hence, he wants to learn all day. Get him to be producer again. He produces. He's really great. But I'll let you guys handle him. But when I heard that, I was just sort of like, it spoiled all my dreams of sitting in the Beit Midrash. You know, but things like that kept happening. And I was just like, I realized I have to go and go.
Can I ask you another question?
Uh-huh. Right.
My question to you is, I see you very strong, but as you know, there's a famous person also that being very, you know, religious, also convert, and there's no more kippah anything.
Right.
And my question is, no, you see very strong. The question is, how do you hold it together as opposed to other people that are, you know, they want it, but it just eats them up, the fame or the, you know, the women, whatever it is. How do you, what keeps you, your family, your friends? I mean, what is it that, it's like, you know what, I can stay in hip hop, I can stay doing my thing, my, you know, friends with it, but I have a
Shen
and I have...
Right. So part of it is, you know, it's a little bit of all of what you said. It's like you have to have the family, the friends, the support system. You have to have that. And the other part you just said was that I can stay in hip-hop and all that. No, I'm bringing something there. I'm not staying there, you know. I'm bringing it there. And so, therefore, because I asked the same thing. I asked, you know, one of my Rebbe back in Seattle. I asked him, I said, you know, How's this possible? We're talking about another entertainer that, you know, obviously was unable to continue, you know, with the Yiddishkeit to some degree. But, and I asked him, I said, what's the difference between, you know, Lubavitcher Chassid, who's in the middle of nowhere where there's no schools or whatever? He's saying, no, they're bringing the Kedusha. You know what I mean? They're bringing it there. And that's the whole entire mentality, is that I can't have that I'm fitting in and that I'm gelling in. And another thing is that not being afraid to say it can't happen. It can happen. It can happen. I think that once a person thinks that they're full of gava and they think that all of a sudden, you know, I'm going to go back out here and I'm going to be me and all that other stuff, it's like, no, I'm not afraid to say that. It can happen. Do I have any tava to return to that? Absolutely not. Not 0%. I dread sometimes having to go into places I have to record and or to play in the first place. But as long as I'm realizing that, no, this... it can easily happen, then it creates some sense of year, creates some fear of ever returning that way. So, is that the shame? It continues, but,
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, Kavod, you have to hold up where Bobby didn't hold on.
Right.
Most of us here, get Aliyah, got one Nishama. How many of you have an additional Nishama? You're a person who had an additional two Nishamas when you came here.
Right.
It's difficult enough to change it with the first Nishama. How did you and your family make a decision to leave the United States and to come here? And how long have you been here?
Ask me that when we move. I wish. God knows, I'm working on my wife every day. Inshallah, he's able to do to Hashem, if you will, please. If you will, you know. It scares me now because I heard Rob Doror say that Rob said that some people have to be in the United States, and I'm sitting there going, I hope he's not talking about me. But for sure. I'm working on it. I'm with you. I'm working on it. To the neighborhood I grew up in? Let me tell you, the funny part is, I'm staying right now in the neighborhood I grew up in. The neighborhood I grew up in, 98118, if you look it up, I hope I'm still right, but I've been right for the last couple of years, is the most diverse zip code in all the United States, right there in Seattle, 98118. I mean, there's different, you go to New York, you have every shade of everything, but the thing is, still segregation there, so nobody really lives together. But if you go to Seattle, when you go to 98118, that's also where the biggest Jewish community is, too. And so I grew up, I'm making the same schlep every day that I did and I was in kindergarten, fifth grade, you couldn't have told me after I graduated fifth grade that I was make the same walk. I'm making the same walk. So, Baruch Hashem, everything's full circle. I moved back into the neighborhood. Well, a lot of the people that I'm around now, I'm up the hill, not down the hill, so I'm not around the same people. But, sometimes I run into guys that I knew from the other light, and they feel aura of light, and they go, man, I'm happy for you. That's all they really can say. I don't get a lot of, who knows what they're saying when I'm not there. But at least in front of me, they're like, you look happy, you look, content. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
It's amazing, all the states and people saying God bless Israel, all these things are like,
all right.
From Europe, it's right. Like,
Right. That's amazing. It is amazing.
I'm sorry I was late, so I missed some of the beginning, so I hope I'm not asking about something already said. But in terms of you being the portion of your life when you were a devout Christian, were you evangelical during that time?
I don't know really what I was. I just went to teen groups. I wasn't even really involved in a church.
So you were like trying to get other people.
Absolutely, to come to the teen group, yeah, that's what they do. So they, give you a card, four step, this is first you have to engage, then empower, then, so absolutely, it was evangelical in that sense.
What happened with that? Like, did you have any feelings, pulling you back from that thing, I'm not sure this is right, or did you feel like at the time, this is it?
At the time, I definitely felt like this is it. I felt like it was, but at the same time, I was 15 years old, 14 years old, I wasn't, by the time I became an adult, I became a skeptic. At that time, absolutely, because you have all your friends are there, and you're doing your, when I started learning, and when I asked that question, I went to Rabbi Google, I was 20 years old. So it was at the age 20 that I started asking the questions and all that. So anything prior, before, I think maybe from 17 or 18 to 20, I started hanging around the same guys again. So I was going back into a much more darker light. I was disconnected from the Christian youth group days at that point.
So at that time, it was like there was a culture that makes you feel like this is it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was a fun group, It was a lot of different things. Like I said, for me, and not being at the home environment that I had to see and the things I was exposed to growing up, I was, anytime we could have been, doing anything at that point. And it would have been great for me. And there was great people there. I'd be lying if I said the people there weren't great people, but you know what I mean?
great people, you know, every good idea is in a God idea, though, so, you know. I'll take one more and then I'm going to leave, okay?
What did you say with the click?
Uh-huh.
Was
really
the right person,
but
the wrong company.
Huh? That was on the wrong company?
Changing companies, right.
I think it was the coming to the realization that, you know, when I took, because my exposure was to all three religions, I failed to mention, but my grandfather was a Sunni Muslim. And so he came to live with us when I was about 7 years old. So he taught me Salat. I learned a little bit of Arabic. I learned how to pray, you know, 5 times a day for, you know. And then he shortly after went to prison. So I kind of knew all of, you know, a little bit enough to know that I wasn't going outside of that box of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. But I asked a question after I started learning when I was 20, and I had those questions. You know, I was straight from Christianity into Judaism, but I asked the question about, you know, when I asked which religion was first, and how was I to determine between, you know. Really, my only questions was on Christianity and Judaism, but I wanted to know between all three. I said, let's throw all three of them in a pot and let's see. And I realized that a few different things, that Judaism can reject both Christianity and can reject Islam, and Islam can't reject Judaism because it builds itself on it. It's the foundation of both of those religions. Is Har Sinai. If you look at the climax of all three religions, what is one? For Yiddishkeit, it's Har Sinai. It's the receiving of the Torah. That's where it happened at, right? If you look at Christianity, you know, Yeshu, he died on the cross, right? That's what their thing is. And for Islam, they received a revelation. For Muhammad, received the revelation. Now, those two, you know, dying on the cross, and that revelation, there's no, you know, it's still, Har Sinai still happened. So even if you say no, 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 they can't say it back. You see what I mean? They can't say that back. And so I realized also, too, that, you know, God would have had to change his mind a few times in order for me to believe. And that, you know, I would have, for Christianity, I would have to believe God changed his mind once, you know. No matter how much they would tell you, oh, no, it's all the same thing, and this is what it already, it's, you know, that's a new light. Or Hadash for real. Alright, so I would have had to say, okay, God changed his mind. So believe in Islam, God changed his mind twice. So then after that, he could change his mind again. Let's bring up the next religion and we'll say that this is it and it's done. He changed his mind again. And so it was no real big theological thing for me. I think me and my brothers were sitting with the rabbi from Jews, from Judaism, Rabbi Skobak and Rabbi Eli Cohen 1 year. And he said, if you, this is when I really had the yearning and I really wanted to be Jewish and I really wanted to be a part of Am Yisrael. He said that you, the Ger is like root. He says, the Ger says that your God is my God, your people is my people, your will is my will, and all these things, you know. So he said, in essence, what are you saying? He said, ultimately, I will accept what the Jewish people accept and I will reject what the Jewish people reject. And I think that statement was probably the most powerful thing that really entered into my heart to say, all right, it's time to cut it. So that was it. Okay, thank you guys all. Thank you.
I don't know how I'm gonna really follow up that amazing story there. So, I think what I wanted to do, because it's what I've been davening on a lot, is just talk a little bit about my stories of Hidbordut, about Shalom Bayit, and how important Rav Shalom's book is. And actually, Nisim failed to mention to you guys that we call it the book. You know, we don't call it the Garden of Peace. We say he needs to read the book. You know, when somebody's, you know, we're always talking about that, and we're big advocates for that book. So there was one time I was on YouTube and I was watching Rav Dvor Moshe honoring your wife. And I had it on, I also put it on my iPod. I was watching Honoring Your Wife. And one part I was in a warehouse, and it's, you know, working in a warehouse is like dark and dingy, and it's like, so you feel so like away from Hashem, and there's things you don't want to see in there, and people listening to cruddy music. And I was listening to it, and, you know, I was like, oh, I do a good job at Shalom Bayit. I'm really, you know, serving Hashem. I'm working on myself. And then he said, you're arrogant. You know, that was the thing that came out, you know, is you're arrogant. You know, your wife is doing all these things, and, you know, and you think that she should be doing this and she should be doing that. And that's really one thing that that was like a year ago, and I'm still working on the same thing, you know, and how I really figured out that I was still working on that same thing. This, before we came here, we went to New York. We went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe's grave, the Ohel. And I was davening to Hashem, and I was asking Hashem, help me understand what I need to, I'm in a place of Kedusha, show me what I need to say to you, what I need to, you know, what I need to daven about. And that same, you're arrogant, came up. You know, it was the same thing, you need to work on your Shalom Bayit. And I started crying because my wife, she does so many things. She's watching the kids, and when I come home, I say, you know, I work all day, and, you know, I do this, and it's just like, it's crazy. It's really craziness. So, here are a few stories about my Hid Bodedut and how the book is really affecting my life. There was one time I told this to Hanan, who I met recently, and I told him that one time before Shabbat I was getting ready, I was getting off work, and I called my wife and I said, wife, could you please, please help me and wash a few shirts for me, white shirts for Shabbat. And when I got home, I had Shabbat flowers, I had everything that I needed, I was ready, and I went to go take, you know, I was going to get ready for Shabbat, and the shirts were dirty, there was a ring around the collar, and, you know, I didn't want to get upset. I was like, you know, it's easy to get into an argument before Shabbat, there's no shortage of arguments before Shabbat, and so I was talking, I was like, Hashem, I don't want to be angry, I know that this is from you, you know, all the line of emunah that you're supposed to have, the three lists that you, you know, everything you're supposed to be putting into place. It's all for the good, it's from the best, it's for a reason. And I go downstairs, I'm getting ready to take a bath, and I look inside the bathtub and there's a ring around the bath. My wife has been asking me to clean that bathtub for 2 weeks, and I keep saying, I'm gonna do it tomorrow. And Hashem showed me through my wife, she's saying, she didn't wash your shirts, and there's a ring around that collar because there was a ring around the tub. It's things like that. It's amazing. And then, so we'll go into another story about first place. Nisim brought up first place. So sometimes I'll test my wife because I know she's an honest woman. She doesn't read the book. She doesn't touch it. She doesn't look at it. She's a very honest woman. Thank God. And I'm sitting there reading a part about first place, and I ask my wife, I send her a text, do you feel like you're first place in my life? And she says, I feel like you try, but I don't feel like I'm first place in your life. And so I thought, oh. And so I said, okay. And so I had to go on the fields on that. I was davening, Hashem, please make my wife feel like she's first place. Help me, Hashem, please make me everything that I do, help her feel like I love her and all these things. And like 2 weeks later after davening about that, she sends me this humongous text, like, you know, the text where they're just like, three texts or four texts or something like that, and it was explaining how much she feels first place in my life, and she feels like I just put her above everything and all these things, and it's just because of the davening. That's it, just Hid Bodedut. Like, I can, it's endless stories. I think about my wife when we first started this journey, it was very hard for her to cover her hair, and she didn't want to do that, and so I was in the fields asking Hashem, help my wife to cling to through the mitzvot, that she would cling through Torah, that she would cover her hair, and you know what? She listened to one shiur by Rav Brody, and all of a sudden she wanted to cover her hair for good, and she's been doing it consistently for a very long time, and it's because of just davening. When you're davening for somebody, not only does it bring you closer to them, but it helps them. It's an amazing thing. So a couple more stories. There's another story about my wife's van. So I'm going to tie everything into my wife because she was getting on me. We moved. We used to live in a 5-bedroom house, and then that house got sold, and we moved into somebody's basement. It was one room. We have 2 kids, and my wife and I, there's no kitchen. And it was just, we used burners, and we used what do you call it, the stoves. We use the little stoves, and people say, if you could live like this, you could live in Israel. That was one. that was the one thing that my wife gave her, you know, if you could live like this, you'll make it in Israel. So, Bezrat Hashem. So, our van broke down. My wife was the only transportation we had. Our van broke down completely. We had, you know, some problems with it sometimes, but it broke down. The transmission was out. And so, my friend here, Devir, he did a 6-hour Hidbodedut. And so, you know, when you have, like, you start to have those desires. You have friends. I have two best friends in my life, and these two are my best friends. And you have, like, a holy jealousy sometimes. You know, it's like, I want to do what he's doing, and I want to get on that level, too. So I never did the 6-hour Hidbodedut, and I decided I was going to do 6-hour Hidbodedut. And one of the things I davened on was the van. I asked Hashem, I said, please, Hashem, it's my wife's only way of transportation. I said, please, if you don't want to fix it, then get us a new one. I said, you can do any of these things, Hashem, it's all up to you. You know, that's just one of the things I was davening on. And a week later, somebody fixed it for free, completely free, nothing. It was a $1,300 job, completely free, and the van's still running today. So because of just that davening, those type of things, Hashem just showing miracles upon miracles upon miracles, it's those type of things that Hashem... Sometimes we forget, like, oh, we have to daven for that? We have to pray for these things, and, like, we don't trust that Hashem's going to answer. And I think the last story was that during that time we were living in that apartment, I was going to take another job because I was tired of the warehouse. And, you know, somebody told me they're going to give me a job, and they didn't give me a job, so I quit. And I thought I was getting a job. I didn't have a job for, like, 8 months, and I was living. No job, 8 months, all learning. I sat in the kolo and I learned, and I was still living somehow, some way. It's all Hashem. But for one day, I don't know what it was, something just, I was learning, and I just, something hit me. When you get some inspiration, you need to really grab it. So I went to the fields. I said, I'm going to do a 6-hour. I have to do 6 hours. I have to do 6 hours. And I went there, did 6 hours. And then the next day, I told Nisim, let's do another one. And he came with me, so he did 6 hours. And the next day after that, we did 6 hours. I did 3 6-hours. He did 2 6-hours in a row. And I was davening, Hashem, we need a new place. My wife is not happy with this place. She's telling me how much she's not happy. At first, she was quiet for a little bit. And I was thinking, okay, we got a little show and buy it. We're okay. She's trying to be happy. And then she told me, she said, it's your job to get me a place. You need to get me a place. You need to go daven to Hashem. She was just really getting on me. And your wife is like, your words get all jumbled and you don't know what to say. You just feel like, what are you talking about? I'm trying my best. I'm doing. So I went to the fields and I davened to Hashem. And today we just moved into our place about maybe a few weeks ago, and my credit's not so great. I had horrible credit, and I can't get into a place, even if I wanted to get into a place, because everybody's denying me. And I davened, I said, Hashem, please, chayn, give me chayn with this person, give me chayn, chayn, chayn. And this person called me up, and he said, you know, your credit's not so good, but I really have favor on you. He said, I really have favor on you, and I want to give you this place. And there was other people who had better credit that applied, but I want you and your family to be in this place. And so those are just some of the stories. And I'm sorry to Hashem that I don't remember a lot more of his kindnesses, because he has, his endless kindnesses. Even just little things, like I would maybe daven on the way to the bus stop or something, that something would happen or something, and it would just pop up. And it's like, I wish I could remember those simple ones. I'm telling you big ones, but, you know, the simple ones, even, like, you know, Hashem's there at every single moment. And that's just part of what we go through on a daily basis in Seattle. Like, you know, when you're not doing Hidbodedut, you can feel it. Hashem is telling you, you need to go to, last one. That's why I'll give you this last one. So one time I decided that I was not going to do Hidbodedut because I was too tired. It was 12 o'clock at night, maybe 12:30. I go to sleep around that time anyway, but 12:30, I said, Hashem, I'm too tired. I'll talk to you while I'm laying down, something, trying to make up any excuse that I can go to sleep. And then when I started to lay down, before that, I was on the internet and, you know, doing just random stuff anyway that kept me up until 12, you know, so I could have been doing an hour then. So I did, I was going to lay down, and my daughter woke up and she started grabbing her ear. She said, and my wife said, you know, maybe she has an ear infection. you know, and so she said, you should take her to the doctor. I said, I'm going to take her to the doctor at midnight. And so I said, all right, I'm going to take her to the doctor. I got in the van. I took her to the doctor, and they said, okay, we'll give her antibiotics. And it normally, the emergency room, it takes 3 or 4 hours. I went all the way down there and came back within 1 hour. Wow. Within 1 hour, and my daughter's ear, we didn't use any of the medicine because it stopped hurting when she got back. She woke up the next day. And those type of things, when you take on doing an hour of Hitbodedut, Hashem will show, like, once you accept it, that it's a met, you can't get away from it. You can never get away from it. It doesn't matter how much laziness, how much whatever you set in, Hashem is going to show you that you won't get away from it, because I'm going to make sure. Because you thought you were going to sleep for that hour, and no, you went to the doctors for an hour. And that's the craziness that really happens. Stuff like that happens all the time, and it's all from Hashem, and it's amazing. And I think, you know, thank you for your time, and that's my few stories that I have.
Thank you.
How's everyone doing? Yeah, so just following up on what Nisim and Yosef said, and this is true. This is our life in Seattle, you know. Baruch Hashem, he's done an amazing number on us. You couldn't predict it, you know. I really feel part of Bnei Israel, because I mean, all of our lives have been a complete miracle. Speaking for myself, kind of a similar background as Nisim. I grew up in a tough environment. Saw a lot of violence, domestic violence, a lot of drugs. And my environment, for me too, it didn't match how I felt as a child. You know, I'm seeing all these different things. I'm wondering why, you know, my father does this or my mother does this. And then too, it was the same thing. I'm talking to Hashem. I don't know why. No one ever taught me this, but I'm asking him, like, why is this? Why do I have this life? You know, why I want to be close to you, but I don't feel close to you. Like, these being 7 years old, you know, or younger, asking these questions. So, but I didn't know how to deal with that. So as time goes on, you know, I decided to take upon myself as a teenager to look into Christianity more deeply for myself. So I try going to church, you know, I get baptized, I try to do the whole number. And, but I didn't feel comfortable. It just didn't fit right inside of my heart. So I quit, you know, and I was very frustrated because I have this feeling, this yearning to know God, but I still feel lost, feeling empty, and I don't know why. So that was very upsetting to me. And I ended up just kind of going with what I knew. You know, like I said, I grew up in a rough environment. You know, the way you make a living or something, you sell drugs, or, you know, you're in the streets hustling, whatever the case may be. So this is what I decided to take upon myself because I couldn't get that fulfillment. So at this time, you know, I'm doing a lot of bad things. You know, I'm hurting a lot of people in my life. And still, I still had a sense of morality for myself as well. You know, I'm like, I didn't understand it. You know, I would go rob somebody. Or, you know, I'm just like, oh, I feel so bad that I robbed that person, you know. But, you know, thank you, Hashem, for the money that I just made. You know, it's craziness, right? But, so, you know, after a while, I just kind of, I guess, maybe ignore that feeling inside. And I remember one time, I met this woman, ended up marrying this woman. I'm no longer married, but I met this woman, and she was going to church. And I really wanted to get to know her, so I decided that, you know what, I'm going to go to church too. It wasn't because I was, like, really interested in it. I just wanted to, you know, get close to her. So I ended up going to church, and, you know, that really sparked that feeling to, you know, grow, you know, bigger. So I started learning for myself, you know. I tried to go to church more. But again, it just didn't feel right. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do the church thing. So I spent time by myself learning, you know, contemplating, wondering about, you know, the Jewish people, wondering about the Sabbath. You know, that's what I, you know, you learn Sabbath, clean eating, you know, before it was Shabbat and kosher. But, you know, thank God, during that time in my life, Yosef over here, we were co-workers, and we both were, when we were friends then, we were both doing things that, you know, we're not proud of. And I spent some time not really in communication with him, but during this time when I was really submersing myself and learning for myself, I gave him a call. I don't remember why. And I end up going over to his house, and he's talking to me different. You know, he's maybe a little more proper, you know, sounds a little more spiritual. And I instantly caught on to it. So I started asking him questions, what you've been doing, what are you up to? And he's like, yeah, you know, I've been reading the Bible, and, you know, my brother, Nisim, you know, he's been going to this place. So he's like, yeah, you should check out this stuff. And I was like, man, you know, I've always been wondering about that. So that's kind of how we ended up going to the Messianic place altogether. And after that, it was just like we linked up together. We learned together. We did, you know, everything together. And like I said, I had a wife at that. By this time, I married that girl I was trying to get to know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I ended up having a child with her. And we were three families. You know, we were doing this all together. We decided after a while, having a lot of contemplation on why doesn't the Yeshiva thing fit, the, you know, the Christianity fit into this life, even when you're trying to submerge it with, you know, immerse it with Torah. It doesn't. It's like oil and water, you know. It doesn't work. So we decided to take it upon ourselves after that conference with Rabbi Skobach to move to an Orthodox community. And like Yosef's saying, like Mamash, we have miracles. I mean, just from the very beginning, just miracles all the time. It's not easy. We come from a background where we don't have a lot of money, you know. So in that community, people have money, and to move into those houses, it's not easy. You know, there's no apartments. Everyone has homes. You know, how is this going to be possible, right? So back then, you know, we're davening, we're asking Hashem, please help three families. Remember, right? Please help our families to find places. And you know, Baruch Hashem, it happened instantly, and we all moved into the community at the exact same day, or maybe it was a day apart, but at the exact same time. And, you know, we're just like, wow, this is amazing. You know, we can't afford these places, but we're going to do it. You know, we're going to be Orthodox. We're going to be close to Hashem. And that just started just an amazing journey. Unfortunately for myself, I didn't make it in my marriage. So I ended up getting a divorce. But, you know, thank God. It was such a wonderful time. Like, I appreciate those moments. I learned a lot about myself. You know, even though I'm not married right now anymore, when we say that book works, it really works. Me, myself, as well, I saw amazement, you know, achievements, you know, from that book, asking Hashem and applying it, you know, where, you know, my ex-wife, she really, I would do things, and she was putting in a lot of effort, but, you know, like I said, unfortunately, it didn't work out. So I ended up getting a divorce. At this time, I'm kind of like, feeling down about that, you know. I'm like, you know, I have a child, what am I going to do, you know, I want to be Jewish, this is confusing to me, and I decided actually to move to Israel at that time. So I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna just go all the way, I'm gonna move to Israel, I'm gonna finish my Garut process out there, you know, I'm just, Hashem, you know, just please, you know, help me, you know, figure this all out. And I ended up coming out here trying to finish my conversion process, but that didn't work out as well. So I'm not going to go into all the details, but I ended up making a decision to move back to Seattle. I moved back to Seattle, and now I'm just low. You know what I mean? Like, I have no job, I have no money, I have no wife. I have, you know, just like everywhere I'm looking, like I don't have anything, you know? So I'm just always taking it to the fields, though. You know, I'm going back over and over to the fields, asking Hashem, what's going on? You know, help me, help me, help me. And, after, you know, a short while, you know, again, when someone asks a question about, like, what for Nisim, what's going to keep him, you know, from, like, falling off the derrick, you know, being a musician and balancing the two worlds, you know, Yiddishkeit and being a rapper. But, you know, for myself, at that time, I felt very low to where I knew I wanted to be Jewish, but it was a struggle for me, you know, at that moment, that time in my life. And these two over here, you know, they're just so much support, you know, saying, like, you know, you just, like, Not in a sense like, you know, oh, you need to come be Jewish or anything like that, but just loving me and letting me work through that out for myself. And, you know, thank God I was able to, you know, keep davening, and he ended up getting a job for me, you know, with just out of the blue, you know, I'm just davening for it. Someone, a good friend calls me up, you know, hey, I have this opportunity for you, you know, get this job. And I'm like, Hashem, okay, now I have a job, help me to get back to the community. You know, these guys helped me out with that, and, you know, another place opened up for me. And then after that, it was like everything just happened so fast. It was like, you know, I'm davening, you know, Hashem, like, I'm serious. Like, there's nowhere for me to go. I can't return back to the old past. You know, I kind of did that a little bit, but it just, you know, it's not going to happen. I knew that at that point. I'm like, I'm gonna die trying, you know. And, you know, thank God the process is sped up. You know, I was able to have my meetings. I was able to, you know, just, you know, everything fell in line. And it was really, like, heartwarming for me because I felt that all the davening that I was doing, I'm seeing, you know, things that I davened about years ago coming into play, you know, like, you know, recently. So I was able to spend, you know, that time and just feel that, like I was saying, that Hashem is really mamash close to the world, not just B'nai Israel, but to everybody, and especially B'nai Israel, for that matter. I remember I got a question by multiple people, but in particular in my meeting at the VOD, at the Beit Din for the conversions, and they ask you, you know, one of the questions, they're like, you could be, you know, a Nohai, you know, B'nai Noach, you know, you could be having a relationship with Hashem. And that's true. But the thing about that is that for myself, my personal feelings about it, it's like, we're talking about Borei Olam here. This is the creator of the world, right? And the way that I feel, I want to be as close as possible to God. How do I do that? You know, you're telling me basically this is the way I look at it. I liken it onto a marriage because he married Israel, right? So I liken it onto a marriage. I could have these guys, I love them. They can invite me to their house. I can live with them. I can eat with them. I can share all the stories in the world with them. But I will still never have the relationship with them as they do with their wives. There's still going to be some type of separation, even if I spent the rest of my life with them. So for me, that's how I felt about Hashem. Like, he married B'nai Israel. You know, so it's like, for me, like, if it's Hashem, I want to know his favorite color. If he tells me to take out the trash, I want to do it with a smile. You know, it's like, whatever it is, you know, I want to do from the high to the low. I want to have this relationship with him, and I want to work on it with him. And for me, I'm like, that's not B'nai Noach, you know. So, you know, thank God, you know, he worked it out for me and just spent hours, days, years crying to him, please, Hashem, hear me. I want to be close to you. I want to be a Yid, you know, and just bring me close. And it's crazy, like, spending time in the field, spending 6 hours, and spending hours here, hours there. I mean, there's times where, you know, I would daven about something, a particular situation, and I'm just crying my eyes out, and I'm begging Hashem, please help me in this particular situation. And then the very next day, he would answer me. You know, like countless of times this happens over and over and over again, to where it's become for me at a point where I can't remember who I was talking to, but, you know, they asked me, I was talking about Amunah with this person, and they're like, you know, well, you know, how do you do it? You know, do you like, you know, do you struggle with like the belief in Hashem, or like, where is it at? Don't get me wrong, I'm always begging for Amunah. I'm by far not like a tzaddik or anything like that, but I feel at the same time that I don't even really... That's not really my struggle anymore. It's like, it's not that I'm doubting Hashem. What hurts me now is that I know Hashem is here. I know that he hears me because he's done it countless of times again. But why don't I spend, you know, like Rebbe Nachman, he wanted his Talmudim to spend, you know, be like animals, to like be like roaring in a field, you know, all day long, praying all day long. How come I can't do this? And I know that Hashem hears me. So that's my biggest struggle, is that, you know, that Hashem, you're with us and you love us, you love me, and I can't even... I can't spend all day with you, you know? But thank God, you know, I'm happy where I'm at. You know, we got to take it a day at a time. So if I could think of maybe one story for me that was pretty amazing. There's countless again, but I'll just use one so we're not out here, you know, all day long. But I remember one time, for me, this affected me really big because it was the first time I ever felt like God answered me instantly. But when my ex-wife was pregnant with our child, she went into preterm labor. We were maybe about 5 months pregnant, 6 months pregnant, and all of a sudden she's having contractions, you know, we're like trying to figure out what's going on, so we rush to the hospital and they tell her, you know, like, basically you're going to have this child, you know, and if you have this child, it's not going to, you know, look too good. Maybe the child's going to be a pound or something in weight. And I spent that time, you know, we're both at that, you know, for that matter, we're you know, praying. We're like, Hashem, help us. And the doctors, they're coming up to us and they're saying, look, we might be able to stop it, you know, for, you know, maybe a couple weeks or something. But, you know, you're going to be bedridden. You're going to have to take it easy. And really, you might make it to like maybe the end of 6 months, maybe 7 months. But you're really pushing it. You're kind of lucky, you know, if that happens. So, you know, I was just so scared because, like, now I'm going to have a premature baby. But, you know, I'm, like, casting that all to the side. And I'm asking Hashem, help us, help this work out, you know, like, create a miracle for us, for that matter. And the very next day, we get a checkup. And the doctor, we go into the doctor. She checks my wife, my ex-wife at the time. And they're like, what's going on here? There's nothing wrong with you. You know, all of the dilations or whatever that happens during the birthing process, they're like, there's nothing wrong. We can't see any signs of this happening. And you're fine. You can go run the track or something like that, you know. So from that moment, I was like, wow, like prayer works. You know what I mean? Like, this is real stuff. And, okay, one quick more pertaining to my son, actually, too. So when we're at the hospital, so he ended up actually being late. So, you know, he's a big, healthy baby. And he was like 8.5 pounds, you know, big kid. We're in a hospital. We give birth to him, or she gave birth to him. I watched, you know. But he was having some troubles with his digestive system or something. And, you know, the doctors were saying that, like, we don't know what's going on. We're going to have to, like, stick a tube in them and do all these things, some type of operation or whatever. And I was just like, oh man, and, you know, I feel so bad for him because this is just a child that just came into the world and now he has to get an operation done. So I went home and I spent maybe a couple hours or so, you know, diving to Hashem, and I was just begging him. I'm like, Hashem, please, you, there's nothing but you and Omavado, you know, like, please answer this for me. When I go back to the hospital, I was like, may my ex-wife text me or call me and say that everything is fine, you know, thank God that there's nothing wrong. And sure enough, like, I'm driving back to the hospital after my, you know, personal prayer. And as soon as I turn into the parking lot, I get a text and it says, thank God, everything's fine, you know, and there's nothing wrong. We're not going to have to do the surgery or anything like that. And like I said, from that point on, you know, that was maybe in 2010, you know, 2013 now. And it's just countless and countless and countless of stories where it's like that. You know, we're in the fields and we ask Hashem for something and he's there for us again and again, you know, to where there's, it's nothing to just be discouraged about, you know. It's really a beautiful thing to be a Yid. So I bless everybody here to really run with your Yiddishkeit and know that Hashem loves us all. So thank God.